We focus in tonight on some of the central themes that we find when we encounter the living God, when we ponder the scriptures and read the story right across the pages. One of those themes is this experience of exile, being away from the place that we know we're meant to be. So often it seems to happen to us. We kind of just wander off at the path that we're meant to be traveling along, and we find ourselves lost in the deep weeds, lost in the thickets of the bush. And God is always inviting, always calling us. And the Hebrew word is teshuva. Come on home. Come and return back to the place where you were meant to be. Adam and Eve experienced it when they were exiled from the garden, sent away to the east, to go away from the place that they were meant to be, the place that they were at ease with God. Israel experienced it a number of times when they were in the promised land and they went away from there, either by choice to go to find food to eat when they went down to Egypt, or when they were conquered and other nations came and took them away from their promised land into captivity, into slavery, into this experience and situation of exile. We know it too, I think, so often in our own lives when we make those choices that seem somehow good. You know, they're pleasurable, they seem to satisfy, they seem to fulfill us, but we know that they're not ultimately complete. They don't offer us that sense of expectation, that desire to be at one with ourselves and with God. And that is the fundamental separation that happens when we sin. So all of these stories tonight are about this sense of what we're meant to be. That Paul invites us to be these apostles of reconciliation. He says, when God did this, he did it not because of anything that we had done, but it was this sovereign work that he did, this act of sheer grace to free us, to bring us back to reconciliation, and in that, to give us this gift of being a new creation, no longer bound and constrained by all of the characteristics that we had in the past. Now we're able to experience this absolute freedom, this joy and this delight. But it takes a long time to get that kind of absolute grace into our heads. You know, so many of us grew up with this notion that God is such a stingy taskmaster. You know, God is always just waiting for us to put one foot out of line, and then he will come and pound down upon us and launch into us, you know, with all of these horrible punishments that we don't think we, or sometimes we do, realize that we deserve. But that's not the way that you actually encounter God in the scriptures. That's not the way that God speaks about himself. We get this sense in the first reading today when they finally, the people finally make their way into the promised land and they're able to finally eat, not the manna, not the quails that they've had to make do with over the last 40 years, but finally they get to eat from the fruit of the land, and they have this experience that now this time of shame is able to be healed. They're able to be removed from that. Of course, our gospel tonight, one of four parables that Jesus tells to this group of disciples, this group of sinners, people that are the outcasts in the society, tax collectors and sinners and prostitutes, people that we don't normally associate as good Catholic people, and then the Pharisees and the scribes, this motley crew of different kinds of people, and they're all together there. The sinners, the tax collectors are rejoicing that Jesus has broken down all those barriers that used to exist, those things that prevented them from ever being in polite company. And this esteemed rabbi is there throwing all those things away and saying, no, come, and I want to eat with you. I want to share life with you. I want you to share in that same experience of friendship as these other disciples are also experiencing. And the Pharisees and the scribes are sitting there going, no, this isn't the way it's meant to be. You know, only the holy ones, the people that come to confession every week, the people that have their crap together, the people that have done the work, people that are faithful at coming to Mass every Sunday, they're the ones that God surely loves. And then he tells this series of parables to counteract it. Normally we think of the first three, but when you turn the next verse in chapter 16, it's just a continuation, another parable that he tells about a dishonest steward who tries to cheat the master out of his property. The first is the parable of the 100 sheep, and the master, the shepherd, finds that one of them is lost. And so he goes searching for this one lost sheep until he finds it. And then the woman with the 10 coins, and she goes searching because one of them is lost. And then we have this most beautiful short story, this parable of a man with these two sons, the older and the younger. As the youngest son, I kind of have a sense of connection with the younger son in the story. Younger sons are always, you know, hardly dealt with. The older son receives a double portion of the inheritance. The older son had all the responsibility, would have, you know, been chosen for all of the choicest jobs around the property of the estate. He would have been esteemed much more than the younger son. Perhaps the younger son was a little bit spoiled. I don't know. Maybe that was also a possibility. But the younger son, in making this declaration, "Father, give me my share of the inheritance," essentially saying, "I wish you were dead. I wish you had gone and just go and die right now." And I'm sure that situation has been repeated in so many families across the generations. And the son goes off into this foreign land. Again, this theme of exile, away from the place he's meant to be. He wanders off and there lives this prodigal life, this life of abundance, this life where he's spending all of that estate, and it doesn't take long for all of the money to be wasted. And in that moment, as he offers himself as a tenderer of pigs of all things, and he realizes that even the slaves, even the servants back in his father's house are treated better than he is in this present situation. And so he begins this long speech. He begins to prepare this story, this offering to himself back to the father, you know, offering and trying to negotiate a way back into the father's good books. Clearly, neither the older son nor the younger son really have the chance to know who the father is. We often call this parable the parable of the prodigal son, but that misses the point that the central character is the father. It's the merciful father who is here reaching out to the lost son, just as the others reached out to the lost coin and to the lost sheep. This sense of us experiencing this experience of being lost, of not knowing where we're meant to be. And in that, God is inviting us and calling us to come back home. When the son finally makes his way and the father is there, searching the horizon, looking and longing, he knows that there's been a famine there in the country that his son has headed to, and he, you know, would fear the worst. He would fear that his son has died in the midst of the famine. So seeing his son, seeing that little profile there in the distance, I mean, just imagine how much joy the father would have been filled with in that moment. And he doesn't wait for the son to make that long journey back. No, he runs to meet the son. And in ancient Near Eastern culture, patriarchs in this kind of situation would never run in 1,000 years. And so the people who are hearing this story are going, "Come on, that would never happen." And yet this is the way of the father. He runs to be with the son. And he calls his servants to bring three particular objects for this son. First, the change of clothes, this robe that expresses that he is still caught up in this royal lineage, that he's caught up to be this true descendant of the father. And so he clothes him with this honor and dignity. He puts sandals on his feet, most likely that the son is barefoot, because slaves in that period were barefoot. You know, you weren't able to escape as easily and all of that. But no, free people were given sandals to wear. So he's clothed with this royal robe, sandals are put on his feet, and then the ring is placed on his finger. Again, a sign of authority, but a ring is also a reminder that there's no beginning and no end. It just continues in that experience. And so the son is fully elevated and restored back to his proper place, and all these preparations begin to celebrate and to offer this gift of this party to bring the son home. A scholar I was listening to recently pointed out that the only way a shepherd knows that one of their 100 sheep has gone missing is because they can count. They're keeping stock of the flock. They're looking at the flock. They're counting the flock to making sure that no one has gone away. The only reason that the woman knows that one of her coins is missing is because she is counting it. And yet the father doesn't seem to know how to count to two. Even though the younger son has come to return home in this moment, he could have sent the servants out then and there to go and to give this good news to the older son. But for whatever reason, he doesn't. Perhaps he's just so overwhelmed by the presence of the younger son. But we see some of this neglect in the way that the younger son understands and experiences his relationship with the father, that he sees the father simply as this stingy person, this person who's only able to offer him this scrawny little goat to celebrate with his family. And even there, he doesn't do that. And yet, the father's true honor, that the father's true character is to bestow this abundance in killing the fattened calf. A scrawny little goat can only feed a few people. The fattened calf is enough to feed a whole village, you know, 200 people at least. And so that contrast that we often bring to our own relationship with God, because perhaps we think that God is distant or away or absent or somehow not part of our lives. But God is inviting us into this experience of new creation. God is reminding us that his true nature is as the merciful Father, longing for us to return, longing for us to be restored and renewed back to our proper place. Today we have that opportunity to experience the tender mercy of God. We can stay in our old ideas. We can continue to believe that God is stingy and a hard taskmaster, or we can accept the reality of the way that God reveals himself, that God is the merciful Father, longing for us to return, longing for us to come on home to Shuva, to return back to the very presence and place of God. Today, let's make that choice to let this gift of the new creation begin to slowly change and transform us to allow us to experience the love of the merciful Father.